So Friends for Leisure started in Macclesfield in 1995. A group of parents had got together. They'd all got disabled children with varying disabilities, and they were all very, very aware that their children were struggling to access lots and lots of services in and around the old Macclesfield borough. And so they spoke to social services, they spoke to the CVS, and a survey was sent out to parents who were known to have a disabled child. And the questions related to how easy or difficult it was for their child to access services. Now, that could be a doctor's surgery, a waiting room at the hospital, the dentist's, the leisure centre, or it could be going to Brownies, going to the library, going to the Cubs, all the things that people do in their everyday lives. And what came back from that survey was that parents of children who had profoundly disabled children had got pretty much what they wanted. They'd got a social worker if they needed it. They'd got a care plan. They might have open access to the children's ward. They were probably getting specialist education and being transported to that education. And everything was pretty much in place. At the opposite end of the spectrum, those with very mild disabilities were pretty much okay. They were accessing mainstream provision, mainstream education, and mainstream leisure provision, so not really struggling that much. But there's a huge group in the middle who were really finding it very, very difficult, particularly to access leisure provision, because their condition prevented them from doing it on their own, and they needed to take somebody with them. And usually that ended up being a parent. And Friends for Leisure was born out of that. So in the very early days, we were very closely associated with the CVS. And then after 3 successful years, we had to register as a charity in our own right. So we've been a registered charity since 1998. So next year, in theory, is 30 years of provision. How things started was that we recruited volunteers, and those volunteers would befriend somebody with a disability and go along to something with them. So it might be the Cubs, the Scouts, the Brownies, it might be football club, it could be anything that that disabled child wanted to do. But at that time, the local authority ran a lot of holiday clubs in the school holidays. So if a child wanted to go to that, a volunteer could go with them. I suppose the role is responsible friend. By the time I arrived here in 2008, all those holiday clubs had gone. The council had pulled all of that. Disabled children and young people then had only got mainstream provision that they wanted to go to, and they were struggling. Even with a volunteer, it was still hard to feel comfortable, feel accepted, feel welcome, and actually get along with some of those activities. And some of those providers were struggling to provide to disabled children as well as they wanted to. We had a look at things and decided that maybe we did have to put some things on ourselves. Some youth groups, some bowling clubs, a drama club, whatever it was that we felt was needed, but continue to recruit volunteers to go along to those groups so that instead of it being a group of disabled children going somewhere, it was just a group of children and young people. So, very mixed ability group. And we'd still had that extra help from young volunteers, and we were still giving great opportunities to young people who wanted to volunteer.
So effectively, like with all the best charities, I think the services you offer have grown over the years. But of course, that comes with its own set of problems, doesn't it? You need more volunteers. You need more funds and that kind of thing. How many volunteers do you have at the moment?
We have 80 active volunteers at the moment, and around 95% of them are under 21. Our volunteer coordinator, Sean, goes out to the high schools and the colleges and actively recruits young volunteers. More often than not, they're female. We don't get a lot of interest from males, but we do sometimes, and that's great. I mean, it's a fantastic experience. So Sean does face-to-face interview, an induction, and then that volunteer has all the support that they need throughout their journey. Often volunteers have a shelf life because they're going to go off to uni or whatever it is they're going to do. So all we ask really is that they give at least 6 months. That pays back the investment that we put into them. We offer them training, so they get training in safeguarding, they get training in maybe in first aid, maybe in some signing, autism awareness, disability awareness, all that sort of thing to help them with their role. And what we find is that by the time they're leaving, they're much more community aware. They're much more disability aware. They're better citizens, let's put it that way, because they have put themselves out there. They've learned about problems that are facing people their age who have disabilities. They're much more knowledgeable. They're much more confident. And we know from feedback that we get that it helps with university placements. It helps with employability. You know, so when they're looking towards their own future, actually volunteering with us, you know, stands them in good stead.
One of the questions we ask all our charities on Charity of the Week is obviously COVID was still is a big deal. Bearing in mind that you are an organisation that forms groups, goes out and does things, it must have hit you quite hard.
It did. It was horrendous. Looking back now, I don't know how we did it, because we took a month out because everything had to stop. So on the 23rd, I think it was, the Monday, the 23rd of March 2020, we ground to a halt. We didn't have any choice. And we were, you know, seeking advice from the local authority. We were seeking advice from, you know, youth support agencies. It wasn't there. Everybody was left to their own devices, really. But, you know, a lot of our young people, apart from their disability, they have health issues and they are very vulnerable. And that was it. A lot of them were still going to school because children going to special school were allowed to still go to school. And we just, everything went online. So we did all sorts of things online. You know, we played bingo, we had quizzes, we had talent shows, we had coffee mornings, you know, coffee and a cake in the afternoon tea. We did everything online. And that suited a lot of people, but it didn't suit some. A lot of children really, really struggled with it, really struggled with it. It was so different and the change was just an awful thing for them. But we did our best and we tried to keep up with providing something, even though it was different. But the team did amazingly well. And as I say, on reflection, I don't really know how we did it.
The key to any charity is adapting, isn't it, ultimately? And I think that, you know, I suppose, excuse me, when you've got young volunteers, they come up with innovations and ideas that maybe
Absolutely.
Others wouldn't, you know, which is handy.
I mean, at the time, we adopted the mantra, if you like, adapt, survive, thrive. And that's how we viewed it.
Mm.
That was our strategy in terms of COVID provision, really. Because what we did do, we lost touch with people, you see. So we spent a lot of time, when we were allowed to come into the office, we came in two at a time, sitting in different rooms, using different toilets, you know, doing all the things that we were told to do. But we were on the phone and we were keeping in touch with families, because obviously, if you've got a disabled child, when the time they spend at school is respite, and then all of a sudden they're there and you're homeschooling, you know, and it was hard and they're not getting a break. If people had carers that came into the home, they weren't coming. If they were having physio at home, that didn't happen. Or occupational therapy, or anything like that. All of that stopped. So families were in crisis. So we were on the phone. We spent a lot of time talking to people and contacting people. And what we did, we sent out happy packs. Very early on in the first lockdown, we sent a packet of sunflower seeds to every child who was registered with us, 250 at the time. And then we ran a competition and the kids planted the seeds and then sent photographs and we, you know, gave a prize to the tallest sunflower. And then we realised that actually the volunteers were struggling as well, because they weren't doing what they normally do and they were being homeschooled and, you know, and everything that came with it. So we sent out happy packs to our volunteers. So we sent out biscuits and tea bags and, you know, recipes, and I think a lot of banana bread was made. So we tried to do that. And then, of course, our parents, you know, they were having a tough time. So we sent happy packs out to parents with tea bags and chamomile tea bags and biscuits. And again, mindfulness reading and that sort of thing. And they were really, really well received, because I think people thought, actually, we haven't been forgotten. You know, somebody is thinking about us in the middle of all of this. And then when we were allowed to do a little bit outside, we had games in the park. People brought their own picnic, but we were able to play rounders, you know, but we were still wiping the bat and doing all those things. And we tried to sort of do outdoor things. And then, of course, we had lockdown again, so we were back to where we were. And then gradually we started to kind of open up, as did everybody else. But it had changed. It had changed everything. And a lot of young people really struggled, because they were worried that we were going to shut down again. and they didn't want that to happen. And we still have that legacy now with some of our young people who, you know, at the end of every session are saying, you will be here next time, won't you? There will be another Friends for Leisure, won't there? You know, you're going to be here next time. Because that was just such a difficult time for them. And I think that the young volunteers that we're recruiting now, we feel perhaps don't have the levels of confidence that pre-COVID volunteers had. You know, their education and their lives have been affected by 2 years of total change and total uncertainty. They're coming out of it having had 2 years of their education completely disrupted, turned on its head, and they're not in the same place when they hit maybe 16 as previously 16-year-olds were.
So COVID was obviously a tough time. Straight out of COVID, we go in towards a cost of living crisis. Funding and that kind of thing must have been a real issue. How have you coped with that?
Well, during COVID, there was a lot of COVID-specific funding available, and our fundraiser at the time, Claire, did a sterling job in accessing that funding. But when that ended and lockdown ended and things got back to some kind of normal, whatever that is going to be, and that money dried up, and a lot of the funders that we would previously have gone to had changed their criteria. So although it's awful to say, disabled children aren't that high up on the pecking order anymore. You know, other things, particularly cost of living, loneliness in older people, and these are all very, very worthy causes, but disabled children is just not up at the top of anybody's list anymore. So yes, that's a challenge. And then the local authority, Cheshire East Local Authority, is in a mess. I don't think we can call it much else. They're in crisis. And so last September, our funding was cut by 25%. And that's hard, you know, because what we'd built back up after COVID was then sort of taken away again. And once people have had a service and enjoyed a service and needed a service, to then take it away from them, it doesn't sit well. Mm. You know, when you work in this sector, you work in this sector to make a difference. And the hope is that whatever it is you do is helping somebody else. Changing a life, maybe, you know, ultimately, but at least helping. And when you can't do that, it feels terrible. We've tried our best. We've tried to keep seeking out additional funding. And what we find is that a lot of funders will pay for the activities. So they'll pay for bowling or they'll pay for drama, but they don't want to pay any salaries. We have six, you know, employees here, and good employees, good staff who do a fantastic job. And we want to be able to pay them the right kind of salary. And, you know, the cost of living crisis is affecting them as well. So it's a double whammy, really. Funders want something they can hang their hat on and put a photograph in their annual report and say, oh, look what we've paid for. But actually, it takes a lot of time and effort for us to provide something. And people see that end result without realising that there are six people in this office running around frantically getting it to that point of delivery. So, yeah, it's another challenge straight after COVID, as you rightly said.
And other aspects of funding, I assume you accept public donations, and do you hold events and things like that?
We don't do a lot of community fundraising, but that might be something that we have to do. I mean, years ago, we used to do street collections, you know, and that sort of shaking a bucket. But people don't have change anymore. You know, we used to get our young people involved in backpacking at the supermarket. People don't pay with cash anymore. So there's nothing left over to put in a bucket. Mm. So we've had to kind of rethink that. And then it's the work involved. If you've got a fundraiser, a part-time fundraiser in our case, who's trying to get grant funding in, then there isn't a lot of time left over to be organising a lot of community fundraising. So it's a balance, I suppose, trying to strike a balance. We used to collect second-hand books and then sell them at sort of marketplace events, but those events haven't come back. So that's a challenge. Yeah, I mean, we look for funding wherever we can find it. Actually, one of our registered young people has just raised £1,300 for us. She has cerebral palsy and she has an adapted bike, and she wanted to do something for Friends for Leisure because this is where she's made friends. And she said that she would ride on her bike 31 miles in 31 days of January. And she's just done that for us, you know, which is absolutely amazing. And we do get donations, not a lot. I think that a lot of people in Macclesfield, actually, when we moved to Congleton in 2009, a lot of people in Macclesfield who knew us thought that we'd packed up. And we hadn't. We'd only moved to actually double in size and take on, you know, a bigger area. So I think it's always hard. And I'm not sure that people have got a lot spare. You know, that's the other thing, isn't it? It's one thing going out and asking for it. It's another thing, have people actually got it? And that's, you know, being a charity at the moment is tough.
I suppose, I mean, one of the things that I get the impression of with Friends for Leisure is the fact that, yes, it's a charity, yes, it does lots of outside events and things like that, but ultimately, it's got a real family feel to it. Is that something that you've deliberately set to do, or just found?
Absolutely. What we find is parents of children who have additional needs have to fight for so much. They have to fight for the right support. They have to fight for a diagnosis. They have to fight to get the right education or the right place, you know, establishment, and then to get the right level of support in that establishment. They have to fight to get transport. We don't want being a part of Friends for Leisure to be a fight. You know, we're not disability specific. It doesn't matter what the disability is. And increasingly, we are finding that young people have mental ill health and higher levels of anxiety, and that is disabling, particularly in a social setting. So we try to offer help to families, whether it's signposting to other services. You know, we're very big on if we're not the right service, or if somebody's receiving our service but needs something else or more, then we try and help them with that. It might be help with benefits, not necessarily giving benefits advice, but maybe letters of support, you know, that kind of thing, because that's what we want people to feel, that we are supporting the whole family here.
Mm-hmm. So basically an all-serving charity.
That's what we're trying to do. I mean, yes, the top of our main cohort, if you like, is the registered young people, and we have about 210 at the moment. Then we have our cohort of volunteers, so that's secondary. But every one of those volunteers and every one of those young people belongs to a family of some sort. And they're all part of things as well. So, yeah, we're very keen to do that.
So if anybody listening right now thinks, actually, you know, I'd love to be able to help, I'd love to make a donation, or I want to make use of your services, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
Our office is in Congleton, and the telephone number here is 01260 275 333. A telephone call is all it takes for us to go through whatever it is that person wants to do or needs. We have a website, www.friendsforleisure.org.uk. If you want to volunteer, there's a downloadable application form that comes straight through to our volunteer coordinator. If you want to make a donation, that telephone call, you know, is all it takes. We have a generic email address, info@friendsforleisure.org.uk. But I think more importantly, if somebody knows somebody who they think could use our service. So we work with disabled children from the age of 5 to the 21st birthday. And we do that intentionally because most children's charities stop at 18. And a lot of our funding stops at 18. But we know how hard it is when a child, any child, hits 18. They don't become an adult overnight. And for disabled children, that transition into adulthood is hard. You know, there are lots of things going on. Transition to adult services, which is very different. Transition in terms of education. So what we want to do is keep the friendship circle in place during that difficult time. So if your child or someone you know has a child who you think can be helped by our service, contact us on any of those and we can point you in the right direction.